Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Jeremiah chapter 21, which I will entitle Jerusalem Will Fall to Nebuchadnezzar. That's a recurring theme all the way through the first 20 chapters of Jeremiah. However, now we are located for sure in the reign of King Zedekiah, who ruled from 597 to 586, and he was the last king before the destruction of Jerusalem. Let me give you some introduction to this chapter before I begin. As Ellicott and Barnes point out, this is a new group of prophecies which are distinct from Jeremiah chapter 1 through chapter 20. Jeremiah chapter 1 through chapter 20 is the so-called role of Jehoiakim, who ruled from 609 to 598, as Ellicott and Barnes say. Now, in our previous audios, I've been saying that somewhere during the times of Josiah or Jehoiakim, maybe Zedekiah, Jeremiah was prophesying, and I think that there's no way to really tie it down closer than that unless there's something I don't know about. But Ellicott and Barnes say that Jeremiah 1 through 20 is the role of Jehoiakim, which sort of cuts Jeremiah out of the times of Josiah. But Jeremiah 1:1 says that Jeremiah started prophesying in the 13th year of Josiah. Josiah ruled from 640 to 609, so the 13th year would be about 627 or so. So at any rate, Jeremiah was preaching in the first 20 chapters about the oncoming army of Nebuchadnezzar, but now, starting in chapter 21, the army of Nebuchadnezzar is getting very, very close. Jeremiah 21 through 33 is this next section of prophecies, and that section is called the Role of Zedekiah, according to Ellicott and Barnes. So we begin now in verses 1 through 7. The word came to Jeremiah from the Lord when King Zedekiah, he ruled from 597 to 586, Zedekiah sent to Jeremiah, Pashur, son of Malchijah, and the priest Zephaniah, son of Maaseiah. They said, Inquire now of the Lord for us, because Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, is attacking us. Perhaps the Lord will perform wonders for us, as in times past, so that he will withdraw from us. But Jeremiah answered them, Tell Zedekiah, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I am about to turn against you the weapons of war that are in your hands, which you are using to fight the king of Babylon and the Babylonians who are outside the wall besieging you. And I will gather them inside this city. I myself will fight against you with an outstretched hand and a mighty arm and anger and fury and great wrath. I will strike down those who live in this city, both men and animals, and they will die of a terrible plague. After that, declares the Lord, I will hand over Zedekiah, king of Judah, his officials, and the people in this city who survived the plague, sword, and famine, to Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and to their enemies who seek their lives. He will put them to the sword, and he will show them no mercy or pity or compassion. Now, in verse 1, Zedekiah, the king, sends to Jeremiah the prophet two individuals. The first is Pashur, son of Malchijah. Now, there was a Pashur in chapter 20 who was a different Pashur. Let me read that, Jeremiah 20, verses 1 through 2. Pashur the priest, the son of Immer, and chief official in the temple of the Lord, heard Jeremiah prophesying these things, these doom and gloom things. So Pashur had Jeremiah the prophet beaten and put him in the stocks at the upper Benjamin gate in the Lord's temple. So Pashur was some kind of temple official, maybe head of the temple police, maybe the head of the course of priest named Immer, his ancestor. Maybe he was the Sagan, the substitute high priest, who knows, but he was some kind of priestly official who treated Jeremiah terribly, beat him and put him in stocks at the gate of Benjamin at the temple gate. That's probably not going to be the same Pashur who's going to be sent to Jeremiah in order to ask Jeremiah very humbly, please inquire of the Lord for us, Jeremiah. So this is a different Pashur, as Ellicott points out. This Pashur, the chapter 21 Pashur, and this Zephaniah, this priest, they were of the party that wanted to militarily resist Babylon, as the Cambridge commentary points out. Now, this Zephaniah, as Ellicott points out, was actually a deputy of Jeremiah. He's mentioned in Jeremiah 52, verse 24. The commander of the guards also took away, this is in 586 BC, at the time of the siege, the commander of the guards took away Saraiah, the chief priest, Zephaniah, the priest of the second rank, and the three doorkeepers. That verse doesn't say that Zephaniah is a deputy of Jeremiah. Ellicott says that, but I suppose that Ellicott knows what he's talking about. At any rate, it's not the famous Zephaniah the prophet, the minor prophet. If he was a deputy of Jeremiah, Jeremiah would be more likely to listen to him. So they go to Jeremiah and they say, "Inquire now of the Lord for us, because Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, is attacking us." Well, now, Zedekiah and the other top officials of the Jerusalem government have a whole different attitude to Jeremiah now. They're being besieged by Babylon when Jeremiah, in the first 20 chapters, is predicting doom and gloom. They paid no attention to him. In fact, the chapter 20 Pasher put him in the stocks and beat him. But now, oh, we're in trouble. Let's go talk to the prophet. This shows that they were convinced now that Jeremiah was indeed a true prophet of God. As Barnes says, by sending this embassy, Zedekiah acknowledged that Jeremiah held the same position in the kingdom which Isaiah had held under Hezekiah. So Zedekiah spent two messengers, Pasha and Zephaniah, to go to Jeremiah and ask for a prophecy. And the suggestion is, from these two messengers, perhaps the Lord will perform wonders for us like in the past. Well, what might they be referring to? For example, when Israel was freed from Egypt during the Exodus, when the Israelites crossed the Jordan River and wiped out the Canaanites, that would be two marvelous wonders in times past. The two messengers say maybe Nebuchadnezzar will withdraw from us, like, for example, when Sennacherib in 701 BC withdrew from King Hezekiah when he was besieging Jerusalem a little over a century earlier. They're still optimistic. They're not worried about their sins bringing judgment on their heads. But this is how Jeremiah answers in verse 3. "Tell Zedekiah, this is what God says. I'm going to turn against you the weapons of war that are in your hands, which you're using to fight Babylon." Now, what did he mean by that? The weapons that the Jews were using against the Babylonians were going to be turned against the Israelites. This is what Joseph Benson says. "God will as visibly appear against you as if a miraculous wind were to drive back your own darts and arrows and turn them upon yourselves." That sounds sort of metaphorical. I think that's what Benson is getting at. Let's see what Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown has to say on this matter. "I will turn them, these weapons, to a very different use from what you intend them. With them you now fight against the Chaldees without the walls, the Jewish defenders being as yet able to sally forth more freely and defend the fountains outside the walls in the valley under Mount Zion. But soon ye shall be driven back within the city, and in the midst of it I will cause all your arms to be gathered in one place." I will assemble them, namely your arms, as gathered in one place by the Chaldean conquerors, who shall slay you with these very arms. So what Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says is that the gathering there is not the gathering of the Babylonians or the Jews within the walls, but it's the arms. But it is the arms of the Jews who are to be gathered inside the city walls, and the Babylonians are going to take those arms and whack the Jews with them. I think that makes a lot of sense. However, there are some differences of opinion as about what the gathering is. I will gather them inside the city. Who's being gathered inside the city? Well, Ellicott and Poole say it's the Babylonians are gathered inside the city where they shouldn't be. They would have breached the walls, gotten in. Pulpit commentator says it's the Jewish defenders who are going to be gathered inside the city. And James and Fawcett and Brown say it's the arms of the Jews that are gathered inside the city, and the Babylonians are going to use those weapons to kill the Jews. I like James and Fawcett and Brown's suggestion the best. I will say that it's very ambiguous. "I will gather them inside the city." It's not clear what's being gathered inside the city. But all of this is minor technicalities. The point is the Babylonians are going to whip up on Zedekiah and the Jews. Verse 5, God says, "I myself will fight against you, mighty arm and anger, fury, great wrath. I'm going to strike down everybody who lives in this city. They're going to die of a terrible plague." Plagues always break out in sieges. There's no public health when all the amenities are broken down. I mean, I don't think they had running water, but whatever they had would be polluted by dead bodies. The water would be polluted. Sickness is going to be everywhere. Verse 7, "After that declares the Lord, I will hand over Zedekiah, king of Judah, his officials, and the people who survived the plague to Nebuchadnezzar." Now, this happened in 586 B.C. at the end of the siege. And this, of course, is 586, not the first deportation in 597. As Benson points out, Zedekiah himself was not put to death, but he was carried to Babylon where he died. So that shows to me that Benson thinks this is 586. I couldn't actually prove that it was 586. I tried, but I'm sure it was. Now, Benson says that when Nebuchadnezzar was put to the sword, so Benson says that when this attacking started, as in verse 2, was in the ninth year of King Zedekiah, 597 minus 9 is 588. The siege lasted about 18 months, which would get us down to 586. So that gives us a general idea of when all this was happening. And at the very end of the siege, at the end of that 18-month period in 586, Zedekiah met his end. Now, here's a general description of what happened to him. First of all, the sons of the king were slain before his eyes. That was north of Jerusalem in Riblah. His eyes were put out. Zedekiah's eyes were put out. The Babylonians left the eyes in his head long enough so he could see his sons get killed, and then they put his eyes out. Terrible cruelty. Princes of Judah were hung up by one hand. There was no compassion shown to old or young, man or maiden. Everybody just wiped out. Here are the scriptural references, Jeremiah 52, verses 10 through 11. At Riblah, the king of Babylon slaughtered Zedekiah's sons before his eyes and also slaughtered the Judean commanders. Then he blinded Zedekiah and bound him with bronze chains. The king of Babylon brought Zedekiah to Babylon, where he kept him in custody until his dying day. Lamentations 5, 12 through 13, Jeremiah says this, princes are hung up by their hands. Elders are shown no respect. Young men labor at millstones. Boys stumble under loads of wood. 2 Chronicles 36, 17 says this, so he that Yahweh brought up against them, against the Jews, the king of the Chaldeans, who killed their choice young men with the sword at the house of their sanctuary. He had no pity on young men or young women, elderly or aged. He handed them all over to him. God handed all of these people over to Nebuchadnezzar, the king of the Chaldeans. So all of what Jeremiah prophesied came to pass. He not only was a prophet of doom and gloom, he was a very accurate prophet. So the two messengers didn't get the good news they were hoping for. Let me summarize what Jeremiah told the two messengers, Pasher and Zephaniah. Verse 7, Zedekiah will be handed over to Nebuchadnezzar, to the king. Well, actually, it was to Nebuchadnezzar's troops. And Nebuchadnezzar will put them to the sword. He will show them no mercy or pity or compassion. That's exactly what happened. We go now to Jeremiah 21, verses 8 through 10. Furthermore, says Jeremiah, tell the people, he's talking to the two messengers, Pasha and Zephaniah, this is what the Lord says. See, I am setting before you the way of life and the way of death. Whoever stays in this city will die by the sword, famine, or plague. But whoever goes out and surrenders to the Babylonians who are besieging you will live. He will escape with his life. I have determined to do this city harm and not good, declares the Lord. It will be given into the hands of the king of Babylon, and he will destroy it with fire. I can imagine what Pasha and Zephaniah thought, hoping for good news. Maybe God will deliver us. And then getting this blast. Now Jeremiah tells Zedekiah through the two messengers, tell the people, I'm setting before you the way of life and the way of death. That is an allusion to what Moses said back in the law. Deuteronomy 30, verse 15. See, today I, that's Yahweh, have set before you life and prosperity, death and adversity. Deuteronomy 30, 19. I call heaven and earth as witness against you today that I have set before you life and death, blessing and curse. Choose life so that you and your descendants may live. The way of life and the way of death. Follow God, don't follow God. Follow His law, follow His principles, follow His commandments, or don't follow them. You have a choice. You can live or you can die. Now Jeremiah says that whoever escapes Jerusalem will escape with his life in verse 9. That's true. He might escape with his life, but he's not going to escape with his freedom because the Babylonians are going to eventually catch him and take him to Babylon. Or if they don't catch him, the person who escapes Jerusalem will have to live in a rump country where everything's been burnt down to the ground in anarchy. We go now to Jeremiah 21, verses 11 through 15. Jeremiah is continuing to talk to the two messengers of Zedekiah, and Jeremiah says, moreover, say to the royal house of Judah, hear the word of the Lord. O house of David, this is what the Lord says. Administer justice every morning. Rescue from the hand of his oppressor the one who has been robbed, or my wrath will break out and burn like fire because of the evil you have done. Burn with no one to quench it. That's what happened. I am against you, Jerusalem, you who live above this valley on the rocky plateau, declares the Lord. You who say, who can come against us? Who can enter our refuge? I will punish you as your deeds deserve, declares the Lord. I will kindle a fire in your forest that will consume everything around you. Talk about speaking truth to power. In verse 11, Jeremiah says, say to the royal house of Judah. Some people say that's literal, that Jeremiah was to actually go to the royal palace to deliver this message. I don't think so. I think he's talking about the descendants of Zedekiah, the princes of Judah. Hear the word of the Lord, O house of David. Again, the house of David is the descendants of David, and Zedekiah was a descendant of David. All of the kings of Judah now were descendants of David. So this is the government of Judah that's being addressed here. And Jeremiah says, this is what God is telling you. Administer justice, to summarize. And if you don't do justice, my wrath's going to break out and burn like fire. That's exactly what happened. They didn't do justice, and the Babylonians burnt the city down because God was burning like fire. Burned with no one to quench it. No fire department. No water hoses on the fire. It just burned and burned and burned until everything was gone. Verse 13, God says, I'm against you, Jerusalem, you who live above this valley on the rocky plateau, declares the Lord. The rocky plateau, if you've ever been to Jerusalem, that's exactly what it is. It's a rocky plateau. The bus has got to put itself in first gear and climb the hill to get to the top. Jerusalem was famous. That's why it took David so long to conquer it, or the Jews so long to conquer it back in patriarchal times when it was Jebus. Hard to get the city. Famous for being a refuge. And so the people of Judah were being cocky. They were saying, nah, nobody can get us here. Babylonians can't get us. Oh, yes, they could. And they did. God says in verse 14, I will punish you as your deeds deserve. And remember, it's not God's fault that they're getting destroyed. It's their fault. It's their deeds that deserved it. God says, I will kindle a fire. Once again, fire is mentioned. That's what the Babylonians did. They burnt the place to the ground. Now, in verse 14, God says he will kindle a fire in your forest. Now, that's an interesting expression. What forest are being talked about here? Well, I've got five options. Let's look at them. Option number one, this is an option given by Joseph Benson. The forest of Lebanon, which were nearby, right up to the north. I don't know. That's too far to the north for me. I don't think that's what's being talked about. Besides, it says a fire in your forest. The forest of Lebanon didn't belong to Judah. Option number two. This is from John Gill. The houses in Jerusalem were thick as forest. I will kindle a fire in your forest. That's a little bit metaphorical, but Benson says that perhaps houses in Jerusalem were made of the forest of Lebanon. That would be especially applicable to the houses of the royal family in Jerusalem. So I will kindle a fire in your forest means I will kindle a fire in your houses that are built of the forest of Lebanon. Benson mentions that. And Gill does too. I think that's reasonable. Barnes says that the word forest is metaphorical for the idea of everything grand and stately. I think that's a stretch. Benson mentions as an option that forests are a metaphor standing for a city. Benson quotes three scriptures that he says support that idea. Jeremiah 22:7, I will appoint destroyers against you, each with his weapons. They will cut down the choicest of your cedars and throw them into the fire. Well, is that metaphorical or is that literal? Ezekiel 20:46, Son of man, face the south and preach against it. Prophesy against the forest land in the Negev. Now, you know there's no forest in the Negev. That's nothing but desert down there. So Benson says this must be a metaphor for a city. Well, if it's a metaphor, it doesn't seem very obvious to me. Zechariah 11:1, open your gates, Lebanon, and fire will consume your cedars. Well, again, the cedars of Lebanon, but that's to the north of Judah. So I'm going to throw out option number four, the idea that forests are a metaphor for cities. Benson mentions another option. Option number five, forest stands for the idolatrous groves of the city, especially the idolatrous groves of the royal family. I will kindle a fire in your forest. That could be. Well, of all those options, none of them are very suitable to me, but I think that it's the houses in Jerusalem made out of cedar. When I say houses in Jerusalem, I don't mean all the houses. I mean the houses of the nobility made out of the cedars of Lebanon. Now, notice in verse 14 that the fire that's going to kindle the fire of the forest in Jerusalem, whatever that is, that same fire will consume everything around you. In other words, not just Jerusalem's going down, but all the surrounding cities will be taken. I don't know if they were burnt to the ground. That could be metaphorical. Fire is a metaphor for destruction. I imagine some of them just surrendered without being burnt to the ground. But at any rate, the idea is clear. The Babylonians are going to wipe you out. So Zedekiah, don't come looking to me, says Jeremiah. Don't come looking to me, sending your messengers to me, thinking that God's going to go easy on you. He is not. You are doomed. Ladies and gentlemen, on that somewhat unhappy note, we are now prepared to go to our next chapter in our next audio. Jeremiah 22 is the next chapter, which I will entitle Message to the Sons of Josiah. I hope you stay tuned to listen to that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.